25. My Drink and Drugs Hack. These noises, these gurgles and barks and grunts, they're coming from me. They're coming from my mouth. How long have I been making them? I do not know. Where on earth am I? I do not know. Where's my assistant? I do not know. One thing I did know was that my face was in considerable pain. Sharp-cornered objects were jostling for space in my mouth, spearing my inner cheeks and stabbing the roof of my mouth. Mixed with a taste of blood was an unmistakable cocktail of chocolate and nougat. I gasped for breath, feeling my life force waning. Is this it, then, Alan? I thought. Is this where you're finally going to die? I gathered my bearings. I was sat in my car, door open, belt on. It was dark, cold. Pitter-patter went the rain, as if bookending my short and ultimately unhappy life. I was alone, and I felt it. My assistant! I called out through the semi-masticated confectionery. Where was she? My assistant! Nothing. I caught a glimpse of myself in the rearview mirror. My mouth and chin were stained brown from all the binged chocolate. My eyes peeped out redly from a pair of collapsed lids. My face, my lovely face, was now unspeakably bloated. Blotchy skin struggling to contain the expanding Alan within. It was as if bread was being baked in my cheeks. Like a good-looking John Merrick, mine was a face that looked really shit. Ravaged by addiction, it was now home to jowls, eyes, and chin that were being dragged torso-wards by the weight of their gelatinous content. Fat, tired, confused, cold, obese, alone with chilly feet. I had hit rock bottom. I forced another two prisms of chocolate into my already oversubscribed mouth and waited for death to come. The human brain comprises 70% water, which means it's a similar consistency to tofu. Picture that for a second, a blob of tofu, the size and shape of a brain. Now imagine taking that piece of tofu and forcing your thumbs into it hard. It would burst, wouldn't it? Okay. Now imagine those thumbs weren't thumbs, but thumb-shaped pieces of bad news. And there weren't two of them, but there are about half a dozen. Imagine you are forcing all six pieces of bad news, a divorce, multiple career snubs, accusations from the family of a dead celebrity, estranged kids, borderline homelessness, that kind of thing, into a piece of tofu. With me? Good. Now imagine that it's not tofu, but a human brain. And there are not six pieces of bad news, but six human thumbs. That's what happened to me in 2001. My brain had half a dozen thumbs pushing into it. I was trying to ignore these thumbs by making three television shows a day, 6 days a week, and, like a civilian hospital targeted by a contestant on skirmish, my brain basically exploded. It makes me laugh when people suggest I'm exaggerating my psychological distress to cash in on the craze for misery lit. Actually, no, it doesn't make me laugh. It makes me sigh. What I went through was real and incredibly tough, and would have broken a lesser man like a gingerbread man being thwacked with a meat tenderizer. That it didn't speaks to my fortitude and ability to bounce back. All the naysayers who try to downplay the very real horror of chocolate addiction, or scoff at a naked man crying in the bath, or intimate that I'm some kind of Wally, can frankly F off. And the suggestion that I would resort to hyperbole to sensationalize what I went through literally makes me pass out with nausea. But I'm getting ahead of myself. Let me take you back in time. Come. Come with me through the fog-clad mists of time to 1987. We're in the unnecessarily large studio of Our Price Radio. And who's this guy? With the strut and the swagger and the spunk? It's a young Alan Partridge, one of the hottest broadcasters in in-store radio. He sets down his headphones and heads for the door, high-fiving a succession of pleased staff. A head pops round the door, Hey, great show, Alan, its mouth said. Alan stops in his tracks. It's Pepsi or Shirley from Pepsi and Shirley. Wow, thanks, says Alan, scarcely able to believe that an established pop star has complimented his show. She'd been in store to promote a doomed solo single, having had a falling out with the other one from Pepsi and Shirley. We're going for a quick drink if you guys fancy it, said Pepsi or Shirley. Fancy it, said Alan, not half. Soon after, Alan, fellow DJ John Boyd, a couple of producers and Pepsi or Shirley from Pepsi and Shirley are sat in the bar of a Marriott hotel, enjoying pints of bitter, the men, and a wine, Pepsi slash Shirley. Alan surveys the scene, throws his head back and laughs quietly. He's made it. He's really made it. He shakes his head slowly and basks in a euphoric glow of genuine happiness. Then someone nudges him. Chocolate? It's Pepsi or Shirley. Alan looks down to see that she's offering him a strange and unusual confectionery. Brown in colour, but lightly pebble-dashed with white flecks, it comes in centimetre-wide segments that together form a rounded pentahedron shape. He wouldn't normally. Even then he was prone to a fat back. But he's in celebratory mood and feels good. It's a party atmosphere. A bit of fun. Sod it. Why not? He takes one. At that moment, his life changes forever. I'm going to revert to both the first person and the past tense now, because it's quite tiring to write like that, and I've just had a mug of hot milk. At that moment, my life changed forever. The wallop of honey and almond nougat was the first to strike, the nutty sweetness further engorging my throbbing sense of happiness. Then came the hit of rich milk chocolate. Its generous sugar content, somewhat taking me higher, my mind diving and soaring into a new ecstasy. I felt amazing. Gold-plated. Vendome plat. We finished our drinks and went our separate ways. But that sensation of deliciousness, acceptance and professional success were, on a barely conscious level, now inextricably linked with Toblerones. Over the years, I developed a taste for the Swiss delicacy. Nothing I can't handle, I'd always say. It was nothing out of the ordinary. I'd sometimes buy one of the small ones while queuing at a supermarket checkout, or grab one to enjoy with a sandwich at a petrol station. I knew what I was doing. It was just a fun snack, a choc treat. After all, who doesn't like Toblerone? I thought nothing of this until several years later. I was sexually assaulted. I had my pants removed and ass exposed by hooligans at a live comic relief event. With incredible selfishness, many of the people who'd pledged money to the poor of Africa were only happy to see the cash reach the needy if they could first peer at my naked anus. When I refused, I was gangdy-bagged. Badly shaken, I began to drive home. I was deeply embarrassed by what had happened, and felt small, unappreciated, and cheap. I wanted to eat a Toblerone. So I stopped into an Esso garage and ate a Toblerone. I felt a lot better, and should have begun to wonder if there was some subconscious link between my self-confidence and the consumption of some Toblerone. Should have, but didn't. That's what addiction does. It makes you focus on little beyond the next fix. Unwilling to confront my demons, I became steadily more keen on the chocolate snack, silently measuring any hardships I encountered in segments of Toblerone. Argument with Carol? 3 slabs and I'll be fine. Disparaging remark from passerby? 2 should do it. My assistant being an idiot? 3, maybe 4. But she really is pushing her luck. But as my personal problems began to mount, so did my intake. After Carol left, I'd sometimes get up in the night and eat a whole Toblerone to myself. And I'm not talking about a small one. I mean a medium-sized one. On another occasion, I remember ruining a colleague's birthday meal by eating a third of a Toblerone before joining them for dinner. Sated by the snack, I was unable to finish the lasagna she'd cooked and only had a small amount of dessert. Selfish, yes, but as a very real addict, I was consumed by my own desires. More and more I ate. After the death of newly installed BBC Commissioner Chris Feather and a mean-spirited and unnecessary investigation by the BBC, my second series was snatched from my grasp. My reaction? banging on the door of a BP garage at 2 a.m, pleading for a hit of Toblerone, and getting it. It was open 24 hours. Also, my friend worked there. I was, by some distance, the most depressed and troubled man in the UK. Probably a lot worse than this sounds. In retrospect, I guess the BBC snub was the real sickener. Until then, I'd been on a fairly even keel. Sure, I'd had my share of ups and downs. That's Partridge. Comes with the territory. But the unjustness of the BBC stopping me being on the television saw me shrink into a dark cranny of fed-upness. And that's when I really began to behave differently. I'd watch endless repeats of Birds of a Feather, a programme which I quite rightly despised. My assistant says I stopped checking her expense claims for some time, which really should not have happened. And all the while, of course, I was eating quite a bit of Toblerone. The self-destruction should by now be beyond doubt. The upshot was I gained a lot of weight. I mean, that's just science, and I'm not denigrating the food at all, but it's just human psychology. Lethargy plus Toblerone equals obesity. Even the guys at Kraft can't argue with that. I'm not having a pop at them or anything. All of this made me very unhappy. In my mind, I was living in an old Hillcroft atop the Coolin on the Isle of Skye. But I was no wee bonny boat like a bird on the wing over the sea to Skye. I was a big bonny man, and if I was a kind of bird, it would be a turkey, about to be incapacitated by one of Bernard Matthews' henchmen for some poor family to celebrate the birth of Jesus Christ. I sometimes thought the kindest thing would be to put me out of my misery, chop my head off, gut, truss, and baste me, then cook me at gas mark 5, or 190 degrees centigrade, for 3 hours, check after 2 hours, and then place me center table for a Christmas feast. In death, at least, I'd be able to feed an extended family of, say, 20, what with me then weighing in at 230 pounds. Even allowing for shrinkage, I'm going to have had a cooked weight of the best part of 190 pounds, easily enough to feed 20 to 30 guests, with sandwiches lasting through to the Epiphany, a.k.a. the 12th day of Christmas. And so, inexorably fatter and more housebound, I saw myself turning into a third Bird of a Feather, although others routinely mistook me for Eamon Holmes. Routinely. Even my voice, once so agile and clear, was, like Eamon's, now muffled and cramped by throat fat. Then one day, I lost control. It wasn't a single trigger, but an accumulation of minor accidents. How to explain it? It was as if I was carrying a lot of straw on my back, and people kept adding another piece of straw, and another piece, and another, until I couldn't carry any more, because my back had broken. One piece on its own seems harmless, doesn't it? But when added to loads of other pieces of straw, it adds up until one piece of straw crosses the divide between can carry and can't carry, sorry. That's how I explain it anyway. I lost control, and I ended up driving to Dundee in bare feet. I'd heard of addicts blacking out, but thought it was just one of those things people say to get attention. Yet so complete was my mental collapse, I remember literally nothing of my journey to Scotland. Not a flicker of memory, other than the fact that it was the A11 to Thetford, continuing to Ipswich on the A146, before a short hop on the A140 saw me join the A47, and later the A17, pretty much until the A1. It was A1 and A1M, including a quick pit stop at Wetherby Services for petrol, more Toblerones and a face wash. Then on the A66 via Scotch Corner and onto the M6, which, after the Scottish border, became the A74. Then it went M74, M73, M80, M9, A9, M90, and then the A90. It was only after arriving in Dundee and pulling up in the middle of a municipal football pitch to unwrap another Toblerone that I came around. Pretty much at the point where this chapter started. So now I'm going to carry on from the point where I stopped and started talking about tofu. I will do that now. I didn't feel up to the drive home, not least because I had no shoes and felt daft. So I contacted my assistant, who travelled overnight while I lay across the generously proportioned back seat of the Vectra, finishing the last of the Toblerones and using the verdant shrubbery as an improvised toilet as and when. My assistant doesn't own a car, and the train was, I felt, too expensive. So she'd taken the National Express coach, clutching my best shoes in a plastic carrier bag. She told me she'd sat next to the coach's chemical toilet and I was concerned that my shoes might smell of human waste, so I lost my temper with her a little bit, but was mollified when I smelt the shoes and they didn't smell of human waste. She quickly washed and shod me, and then began the drive home, with the hosepipe dangling from the exhaust like the tail of a giant mouse. Oh, I should have said this was for a suicide bid, which I didn't get round to. But for such a bird-like woman, she was far too hard on the clutch, so after a few hundred metres, I took over and drove home myself. I gave her a lift as well. Little was spoken on the way back. She could tell from my body language that referring to the open arms of Christianity was inadvisable. So she listed some of the times when I'd either done something well in my professional life or said something spontaneously witty in company. Afterwards, she used the light from her mobile phone to read aloud from Prima magazine, but quickly fell asleep. I got home and had a can of bitter and a sleeping tablet, the drink and drugs side of the chapter title. I subsequently made a number of changes to my life, which resulted in me getting better. I'd done it. I'd bounced back. The doubters could shut their faces because I'd done it, and so, with fewer work commitments, a slimmer physique, fresher breath, less clutter on my desk, and a blanket ban on Toblerones, I felt like a new man. Quite a turnaround, then. Yep, it's a tale of incomprehensible pain and hardship, of bravery and backbone, of me and my success. One that could easily be stretched out into a film or novella, if only because that kind of addiction's not really been done before, and would therefore feel fresher to a reader or viewer. Just a thought. The other addictions grab all the column inches. Let them. It's not a grief competition. I don't know why they think they have something to prove. And sure, maybe there's something glamorous about a booze man swigging whiskey on a sidewalk, or junkie chasing the dinosaur in a squat. But take it from someone who knows, both physically and mentally. Confectionery addiction is the worst kind of addiction there is. Nothing comes close to the shame, desperation, and unsightly weight gain of chocoholism. So who's to blame? Me? Society? Kraft Foods? The government? Pepsi or Shirley out of Pepsi and Shirley? In all honesty, it's probably a combination of them all, with a slight weighting towards Pepsi or Shirley from Pepsi and Shirley. You don't go pushing something as powerful as Toblerone on someone you've only just met. It's utterly irresponsible, and I'm absolutely furious with one of them.